Vegas. Losers of 7 and 9, but winners today. 5-1 over the Predators. A resounding home ice victory for Malcolm Subban and the Golden Knights.
Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM flagship station of the 2018 Western Conference champion Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. Catch us here every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. Also here, Chris Magnum Chapman, producer, Lotus Broadcasting personality, and you can catch Chris on Vegas Golden Knights Radio, where he moonlights as the locker room correspondent. Out of Line is streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM. And if you need a visual, you can't see us on Facebook Live. Check out and like the Facebook page. It's easy to find. It's called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. Always interested in hearing concurring and opposing views on what we talk about. So, hey, the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is sponsored by our title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out CardinalFinancial.com. The Vegas Golden Knights ended their longest home losing streak ever. Vegas Golden Knights Radio's Frank Harnish will join us for Nightcap to talk about that in just a few minutes. The Runnin' Rebels are on a two-game winning streak. Unfortunately, those wins come against teams they not only should beat, they have to beat. The Las Vegas Review-Journal's Mark Anderson, who is responsible for covering the UNLV men's basketball and football beats, will chime in on the state of UNLV basketball. And there's Fact This and Blazin and me and Magnum full of opinions. That's all on tap. What's on tap comes your way thanks to the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out CardinalFinancial.com for more information.
Knights come in. What a move. Carlson down the slot. Couldn't shoot. Now Peary in the middle. Blocked. Another try. Score. Brandon Peary. Power play goal for the Knights. 2-0 Vegas with 9 minutes to go in the second period.
Was it for you to get a power play goal tonight, for you guys to get one?
Our power play, like right from the probably the second one, it was, you know, because we took a penalty there in the first one, but our power play was buzzing. We had a lot of opportunities, and you know, ends up in the back of the net off of an entry and then a block shot. But I thought that, you know, both units were able to sustain some good pressure and get a lot of opportunities and some looks.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
It is time for Nightcap here on Out of Line. Joining us on the phone line, always, man, working the late shift. Got done not that many hours ago with the postgame show for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Of course, he does the pregame show, the postgame show, the Las Vegas Insider Show weekdays here on Fox Sports Radio. Frank Harnish, appreciate you getting up and joining us after a late night again, Frank.
Yeah, it was a late night. It was a windy night, too, so it was a little bit interesting outside of Beer House last night. We had to take the tent down, but, you know, the people looked toasty and warm inside, but we were outside, and, you know, always enjoy it, and always enjoy it a lot more after a Vegas Golden Knights win. The crowd seems a little bit happier, and I'm sure that Chris can tell you in the locker room and everything how much happier the players were.
I was in there, too, man. It was a whole different atmosphere. And, yeah, I was listening to you last night reminding people, yeah, it's cold out here, but when it's 120 degrees, you'll miss this weather. I agree with you. It gets awful hot in the summer. But it was hot in T-Mobile Arena last night as far as the Knights play go. And it was refreshing to see that, Frank, the five-game home losing streak at T-Mobile, something that hadn't been experienced before. This team needed to right the ship. They did, especially Pacioretty. He'd been a little bit of a slump. Great seeing him get two goals last night. Nate Schmidt, I don't know that I've ever seen the guy play a better game end-to-end than he did last night. He was all over the ice, and what a great help to Malcolm Subban, who I thought might have had his best game as a Vegas Golden Knight. And, you know, I know he had the good game against the Blue Jackets where they lost 1-0. That could have very easily been a win. But overall, a really good performance. And even though they lost the shot, they lost 11-9 in the shot category in the third period, they definitely won the third period overall, especially as far as scoring went.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned the third period. Remember, the last two games in a row, they had given up three goals in the third period in both of them. Well, last night, they scored three goals in the third period. Also, when they were giving up the three goals, one of them was an empty netter. Last night for Vegas, they weren't empty netters because Pacioretty actually scored it when they were still full strength out there. So it was I thought it was the best performance that they've had in quite some time. Obviously, the Tampa Bay game was a big one with that one being on the road, but I thought this one from start to finish might have been the best game that they've played in a long, long time. They were firing on all cylinders. They seemed confident. They seemed ready to go. And I think they just completely outplayed Nashville. To be honest with you, after two periods of play, it could have easily been 4 or 5 to nothing if not for UC Saros. And then finally, he kind of hit the wall in the third period, and Vegas took advantage of it.
Oh, no doubt about it, Frank. And, you know, I mentioned also the play of Malcolm Subban, how important that is. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury still on pace to play 70 games this year, far more than he played last year. He's already exceeded what he did in the regular season last year. We know, of course, he was hurt with the concussion early on. But how important is it for this team to see Malcolm Subban play well behind them to give them that extra comfort that if anything did happen to Fleury or Fleury does need a blow, that Malcolm Subban has stepped up and playing like a top-notch goaltender?
Well, I think it's really important, and not just for the team behind him, but also for the coaching staff. Because I think they now have the trust in Malcolm Subban that they can put him in. You know, it used to be funny, and it always kind of, to be honest with you, it kind of irked me a little bit when people would say, well, they have to play Fleury tonight because they have to win this game. If you don't think you can win a game with your backup goaltender, then he shouldn't be your backup goaltender. So I never really necessarily thought that was necessarily the mindset of the coaching staff out there. And remember, the only reason that Subban hasn't played a little bit more is because he was injured for a while. He was on IR. He's won his last three games in a row. He's played exceptional. He's been playing really, really good, solid hockey. Quite frankly, right now, he's actually probably playing a little bit better than Marc-Andre Fleury just because Fleury has hit that wall. And I don't mean physically. Fleury's in phenomenal shape, and he's ready to go. But mentally, remember, this guy also didn't have an all-star break. I know he had the bye week after that, just like every other player. But while everybody else also had the all-star game off, Marc-Andre Fleury was in San Jose. He was playing in the game. He was involved in the skills competition. He was doing all the media stuff and everything else out there, and then had to hop on a plane and fly completely cross-country while everybody else was off enjoying themselves.
No, Marc-Andre Fleury, we all know. I mean, I probably believe, Frank, that, you know, as much as he should be relishing this little hiatus that he's getting in net, I don't know whether Gerard Gallant's going to put him back in net tonight. I want to tend to agree with Dan Duva, thinking that Marc-Andre Fleury will get another night off, especially based on the play of Malcolm Subban. But I'll bet Marc-Andre Fleury probably wants to be between the pipes if you asked him. And I mean, seriously, not like, of course he's going to say that he wants to play, but I think really internally he probably still wants to keep playing, right?
Oh, he definitely wants to play. And you know what? You don't want a goaltender that doesn't want to play. That's why a coaching staff has to be a coaching staff. And Dave Pryor and Gerard Gallant have to sit down and they have to say, look, Flower, you've been playing great for us, and we appreciate everything you do. And whether they say that, if they tell him that they think he needs a day of rest and he's going to say no, or if they just say, look, we need to get Malcolm some more time as well because we need him too. Because, as you know, Brian, and Chris knows it there as well, when you win a Stanley Cup or you want to make a Stanley Cup run, yeah, you basically have one goaltender that you go with the whole time. But so often, it's critical that you do have that backup goaltender. If something happens, if you have a bad game, if somebody tweaks a muscle or pulls a groin, Marc-Andre Fleury won 3 Stanley Cups with Pittsburgh. A lot of people say Matt Murray actually won the last 2. That third one, I will definitely say, well, that was not the case because Flower was in there when Murray was injured at the start of it. If they don't have Marc-Andre Fleury, they don't win that third Stanley Cup. You need the backup goaltender, and you need him to be confident, and you need the team to have confidence in him because you don't know what's going to happen. The second season, it's not a full season, but the playoffs can be a pretty long season, as you know, with 4 7-game rounds.
Well said, man. No question about it. Marc-Andre Fleury was instrumental in that last cup that he won when he was with the Pittsburgh Penguins right before he came to the Golden Knights. And they wouldn't have been there. Murray wouldn't have had a chance to be the hero in the Stanley Cup Finals. But going back to last night's game, Frank, one of the things that a lot of people didn't talk about in the locker room, wasn't mentioned a great deal. I did bring it up to Malcolm Subban after the game in the locker room when Chris and I were talking to him. And at the end of the game, you know, or I should say, excuse me, at the beginning of the game, when that goal was called back, and it was rightfully called back, it was clearly offsides when Sisson scored that goal. But how much do you think that changed the reflection of the game? Because it's all of a sudden like, wow, we got a break here. We cannot lose this game. And it really seemed to all of a sudden the Jets really seemed to start with the Golden Knights after that goal was called off.
Well, you know, I agree with you, but I also think that it was a little bit, I don't know if they necessarily thought that they got a break, because it seemed to me that the players on the ice realized that it was offside even when it happened. Quite honestly, I don't know how the lines person missed it. It seemed like they stopped playing a little bit, and then when he went in and they called the goal good, it almost seemed like they were in shock a little. It's one of the easiest, if not the easiest, offside review I've ever seen in the NHL, probably the easiest challenge that that Gerard Gallant and the coaching staff has ever had to make, but it did seem to wake him up. It did seem to trigger him a little bit and go, okay, that goal doesn't count. We're still 0-0, and then, of course, they go down and they get the first goal of the game, and then they get the goal in the second period. They have a lead. Then they're focused, okay, we've had some bad third periods. Let's go on. So they kind of use that momentum. And remember, they outshot him in that game 50-30. They were also way more physical. They out-hit him 33-17. Vegas won that game in every aspect, and I agree with you. It was a good moment, but it was kind of like one. It seemed to suck the life out of Nashville a little bit more to me than it actually picked up the Golden Knights, because I think that Vegas knew right from the start that the goal wasn't going to be good because it was clearly offside.
Well, I'm not disagreeing, Frank. My thing was, I think more than the players and the coaching staff, it was the fans inside of T-Mobile Arena. I think it was like they went from being breathless to all of a sudden like, yes, that didn't count. And everyone went crazy. And it just seemed to re-energize T-Mobile Arena. And I never thought the game was the same from that point forward. I think it leaned towards the Golden Knights. But I will tell you, man, that second period last night, Frank, was some of the best hockey I have ever seen this team play. Outshot the Predators 24-7 in that period, outscored them 2-0, and all I could say was, wow, watching that period, they were dancing all over the place, and the Preds just did not have an answer in that second period.
No, absolutely, and that's why I say after the second period, I actually think Nashville might have felt a little bit fortuitous in the fact that they were only down 2-0 after that second period. That could have easily been 4 or 5-0. UC Saros kept them in that game. I think Nashville came into the third thinking, okay, we kind of dodged the bullet there. Now let's go out and win. But Vegas, maybe because of the last 2 games that they've had and the third periods they had that they were not very good, they were like, okay, we're not going to let this one slip away. Let's keep the focus. Let's keep on playing. But yeah, I agree with you. That second period was absolutely sensational. The only bad thing about it was that UC Saros was so good. That's the only reason it was still 2-0 afterwards. They should have had more than one goal in that period, but he was excellent as he's been. You tip his cap to him. But no, Vegas played an all-around complete game, and now getting ready for Colorado on President's Day. And Colorado is really struggling lately. They're 1-6-3 in their last 10 games. They are outside the playoffs right now. They basically have one solid line, but that's all that they have. That's all that they're getting any scoring from or whatever. But Vegas still has to be ready for them. It's a game on the road. Colorado's still professional. They do have the one dangerous line. And we've seen that before. After a big win, you have to stay focused, because then they have 4 more at home. But the home ice has not been what it's been in the past. I mean, remember, we're talking about breaking a five-game home game losing streak last night.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, that home schedule is not that friendly. Next Friday, Winnipeg comes to town, and I can't wait to see that game. I think that'll give us a parameter or a barometer of where this team is at right now. And the thing last night that I thought, Frank, one of the things before the game that I was saying and talking to people, like, what are the keys to the game? And I had listened to you and Ryan talking about it, and you said his key player was going to be Perry, and he didn't have his best game, but of course he scored again, and that is mind-blowing, the numbers that guy puts up. But we all know that's what Brandon Perry is. He is a guy that finds the twine. He always has, and if he was a better two-way player, he wouldn't have any question and be a great player in the National Hockey League. But the guys that I was concerned with yesterday, and you said it would be Subban, and you were 100% right, he was a key to the game, but Alex Tuch, Max Pacioretty, and Riley Smith, although Smith has been buzzing and playing great up and down, not to have a goal since December 23rd is really surprising, although he is racking up the assists. But I thought all three of those guys contributed very big last night. To see Alex Tuch get back on his game, I think that is so big for this team going forward. What do you think?
No, I definitely think so. I mean, remember, Tuch has been instrumental, but he's been snake bitten with putting one in the back of the net for quite some time. And Riley Smith is just, I mean, you talk about a guy that's had rough luck. When he did the give and go going down the ice with William Karlsson,
that was great.
He passed it to Bill, and normally Karlsson takes that shot, but when he threw the pass back, Riley Smith had a wide open net. They had UC Charles beat, and he still hit the side of the net. So he's still having a little bit of struggle right now, putting it on goal and getting it in. If he gets one, I think that'll be a big relief. But right now, I think they're all breathing a sigh of relief because they did get the win. Now they're hopping on the plane this morning. Remember, they're going to Colorado this morning, and the game's not until Monday. They're not going up there because of the time zone difference. It's only mountain time. It's only 1 hour. But they want to get acclimated to that elevation up there.
And, you know, you need it. It's always something you've got to prepare for. And as you mentioned, this Colorado team really is a team right now going backwards. But that one line, their first line that you talked about, all three of those guys log more minutes than Nate Schmidt. I mean, they are on the ice an awful lot. And like Marc-Andre Fleury, if you're overused, it's going to hurt you over the period of time. And I just don't think this Colorado team has a run left in them. But could they beat the Golden Knights tonight? Absolutely. This is not a game where the Golden Knights can go on the road and think, well, we got a Colorado team that's in reverse. That reverse can go into forward real quick, and things happen just like that. And like real quickly, I don't want you to go yet, Frank, but Magnum and I had a chance last night to talk to Malcolm Subban after the game, and Chris started off, and I really like, starting off with his parents being in the stands, his mom being there, and Chris started the conversation off with that.
That great win tonight in front of mom.
Oh, it was huge. It was unreal. I mean, obviously, it's great when family's in town, and I'm happy that I could get in front of her for sure.
First start in a while, because obviously you missed some time due to injury. Just how good does it feel to go out there and play? Really, I mean, you've played really well your last couple starts, but tonight, especially after that long layoff.
Oh, it feels great. Obviously, every time you have a long layoff, you want to get in there and just give your team a chance to win and, make the easy saves and, not give them any goals. So just focus on the little things.
Nate Schmidt was all over the ice tonight. He was just an absolute animal. When you're watching him back there, what are you thinking? You're watching him lead not just one rush, but it seemed like so many rushes tonight.
Oh, it was unreal. He's workhorse on the back end. He likes to jump up in the play, and he's got the stamina and the skating ability to do it. He's not the only guy. We have a lot of great defensemen on this team, but, he's definitely one of the leaders on our team, and, he helps set the tone for the boys.
On the offsides, did you see it was offsides? Did you feel it was, or did you not know?
I felt it was. Obviously, I didn't know for sure, but I felt it was. I felt it was offsides, so, I'm happy that it was.
Thanks, Malcolm. Appreciate it.
Malcolm Subban, and what a good guy he is. He got a chance. His brother comes to town, of course, one of the stars of the Nashville Predators, and what a great trip for his parents or his mom to come in town to get to see him play. But I really enjoyed watching him play last night. I've said for, since last year that Malcolm Subban has the look of a potential star goaltender in the National Hockey League. He just needs to get his opportunity, and I think now he's finally filling that role, so really cool to see that. Frank, real quickly, just looking ahead a little bit, and obviously, we know the schedule the Knights have coming up, but the trading deadline is not that far away. Do you think the Vegas Golden Knights will make moves? I do, but I don't want my opinion. I want the expert that's at every game that has his hands on the pulse of the Vegas Golden Knights. Frank, who will they go after, and who do you think they let go in the trading deadline? I know it's mere conjecture right now, but what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think George McPhee is going to be on the phone feverishly. We see him at City National Arena. He's always on the phone calling somebody, texting somebody, whatever. I think there's a couple players out there. I've heard rumors. Again, where do the rumors come from? I have no idea because, you know, George never tips his hand. I know Mark Stone is a name that's out there quite a bit. I think they're probably interested in Wayne Simmonds and other guys as well. My gut feeling, I'm not sure if they make a move or if they do, if it's for somebody that's that big of a name out there, because the one thing that I think this team needs to do is show George that they're maybe just one piece away from winning the Stanley Cup because he's not going to mortgage the future. I'm not sure that they've done that recently. And they only have three more games to show him that before the trade deadline hits on the 25th, which will be a week from this Monday. So, you know, and that's Colorado, Boston, and Winnipeg, the game's coming up here. So I know he doesn't want to give up too much. And remember, too, a lot of times when we're talking about the trade deadline, we're talking about just kind of getting a rental player or something like that, a guy for 1 year. Now, if you could get a Mark Stone and you could get him to agree to come to Vegas and you sign him for a long term, then maybe you give up a little bit more. So I know a lot of people think they're going to do something, and I know George isn't afraid to do anything. I'm just not sure if he's going to, because it seems like a lot of teams might be asking a lot. And remember, anybody that they're interested in, other teams are probably interested in as well. The guy that I'd really like to see, I would love to see, is Artemi Panarin. I just think that the price that Columbus is asking is probably absolutely ridiculous for him.
It'd be a hell of an addition. And, you know, and you're 100% right, Frank. I don't know what moves they're going to make, simply because a lot of times it's overrated. You come to a team that's already got a great deal of chemistry, and you see this a lot of times with veteran players, and they just never jive. They want to get in the mix to try to get that championship. And not that Tatar was an older player at all, but we saw last year, never quite got in the rhythm with the Knights, and then he goes to Montreal this year, and he's lighting it on fire. Sometimes that just happens. So it's not necessarily a fix, but again, as you said, George McPhee, if anybody's on the pulse, he is. And last year, now, it happened well before the trading deadline, but, like, you know, a guy like with Ryan Reeves, I mean, people were booing the guy and thinking it was a terrible move. Now he's one of the fan favorites here. So, like I'm telling everyone, whatever the moves are, don't criticize, man. Look at the success of this team, the general manager, the head coach, and trust his integrity and his ability to recognize talent and what'll fit with this team.
Yeah, and remember one other thing, too. There's a guy that we haven't seen on the ice for quite some time that we could see before the season ends. We saw him on the bench the other day. Eric Halla, nobody's talked about him because we haven't seen it for so long. He might be the acquisition that's already in their pocket. If he gets back and ready to play, he can add a lot. The guy had 29 goals last season. He had a monster year. He already knows the team. The team already knows him. They might already have a nice piece in place that they're just waiting to get healthy to get back in.
Good point. He is Frank Harnish. Again, you can hear Frank every game on Vegas Golden Knights Radio, the pregame, postgame, in-game. Frank and Ryan, the hockey game, they are awesome. And also check them right here out on Fox Sports Radio Monday through Friday. Frank, your Twitter handle?
VGK Frank.
There you go, VGK Frank. Frank, as always, my friend, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's after a game, and there are so many of them, and they blend together, but I always appreciate you going the extra mile, which is something you've always done here at Lotus, and I couldn't be more happy to have you part of the show.
Yeah, so, yeah, everybody, you know, enjoy your weekend, enjoy the rest of the show, and certainly enjoy President's Day, and we do have the hockey game. By the way, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I know that you've shown Ryan and me some love with the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, but, of course, Chris Chapman does a hell of a job for us as well and is an integral part of the show, and we appreciate all he does.
Absolutely, man. I love having Mags in here because it's like having a Vegas Insider every time I do the show, which is really cool.
All right, man.
Take care, man. Frank Harnish, we appreciate you. And heading to break, as I mentioned, Chris and I also had an opportunity to talk to Shea Theodore together, a guy I really like. And I was saying to Chris after the game, you know, Shea was young last year. He started the year in Chicago. Nobody worked harder to get himself up. And it was funny because, Chris, if you remember last year talking to Shea Theodore, he was like, when he came up, I have never seen a guy more determined to never go back to Chicago. And I remember talking to him, and he goes, "Oh, no, I have no plans. I'm going back to Chicago." And you know what? He wasn't lying, man. This guy, I would say, next to Nate Schmidt, I mean, they're all important. We've got tremendous defensemen. Colin Miller, an offensive-minded defenseman. But in my opinion, next to Nate Schmidt, Shea Theodore is the most important defenseman on this team.
Well, yeah. And I don't know about that. I think Brayden McNabb is a very important key as well. But Shea Theodore is certainly a very integral part of this team. We saw last night he had a great goal, really, to, what was it, the third goal of the game for the Golden Knights, really, I think, kind of cemented the victory. But, you know, he's been playing well lately. He's very good offensively. He's good on the power play. You know, I mean, he's still young. He's very young. And at the end of the day, I think the Golden Knights, they kind of pulled the coup getting Shea Theodore from the Anaheim Ducks, because as we remember, it was to take Clayton Stoner's contract, basically. And I'm not quite sure if they ever planned on Stoner ever being part of the Golden Knights or not. But, you know, that was to not take, I can't remember who it was that they ended up trading to New Jersey. They got Adam Henrique, Sammy Vatanen. So they didn't want the Golden Knights to take Sammy Vatanen, and the Golden Knights ended up taking Clayton Stoner, got Shea Theodore in the deal. A couple months later, the Ducks traded Vatanen to New Jersey. So it turned out to be a pretty good acquisition for the Golden Knights. He's under contract for a very long time. A lot of people I know who know the game a lot better than me, they think the Golden Knights got a tremendous, tremendous deal in signing Shea Theodore to that long-term contract. And he's a guy who's going to be in Vegas for a long time. He's my son's favorite player, too.
Well, you know, Chris, I've said from the beginning when he came up, it's him and guys like Alex Tuch that are the long-term future of this Vegas Golden Knights team, and two guys that I think are going to be staples for a long time here.
You know, and it sounds like, because I'm always singing the praises of this guy, but William Karlsson, the things he does, the plays he made last night.
Oh, that give and go with Smith, well, even though it didn't amount to a goal,
but
was
getting,
awesome.
Drawing the penalty, skating right through the Nashville defense, drawing the penalty on that power play. He pretty much does the same exact thing to set up Peary for that power play goal. You know, Karlsson skates through the defense, finds, I can't remember, did he find Riley Smith in the corner, who then backhanded it to Peary, shot it, got his own rebound, and put it in past Saros. But William Karlsson's a guy that I think people are like, oh, well, he doesn't have the goals. If you watch William Karlsson play, he is the most important player on this team.
He is so disruptive in so many ways because he is so talented carrying the puck.
Well, not only that, but he plays the total 200. There was a play yesterday. Karlsson was behind it. I think Marchessault intercepted the pass. Karlsson put on the jets, outskated everybody on the Nashville to get it back into the play. Unfortunately, it resulted in an offsides because I think Marchessault held on to the puck just a little bit too long. But
the skill set you could just see is off the chart.
Like
really
you can't just look at the goals. And I know that's what the fans are, oh, well, he scored 43 goals last year. He's only got, what, 18, 19 this year? Doesn't matter to me. When you watch him on the ice, he is the best player on this team after Mark. I mean, I think you could say Marc-Andre Fleury maybe is the most important player on the team, but William Karlsson is the most important forward, important player who's taken shifts. This team doesn't win the amount of games they do without William Karlsson. They need to sign him long-term. They need to get a good deal done for him because he deserved it. He's earned it.
Yeah, William Karlsson, you know, I was one of them that was a little bit skeptical of him rolling the dice and not taking a contract and just taking the one-year deal because I said, you know, they're going to be focusing on him this year. Last year, he came over from Columbus. No one had any idea this guy was not a guy that's scored double-figure goals, let alone 43 goals. Yeah. So he's no longer under the radar, and I really thought, Chris, that we would see a drop-off in production, which we have, but
First Golden Knights player with 100 points?
Yeah, first Golden Knights player with 100 points, and William Karlsson, it's a crime that this guy is not on an all-star team yet, and I really hope by next year he gets picked for this all-star game because he is a lot of fun to watch, and the all-star game is a 3-on-3 format.
Oh, for him,
They're cheating us all by not putting him in this game because he is one of the best 3-on-3 players in the game right now.
Yeah, he really is, and he's a guy who I think at some point will be rewarded with a very nice contract, and you know, I hope
Deservedly so.
Because he's one of my favorite guys, and I don't want to see him go anywhere else.
I agree with you 100%. Listen, going to break, as I mentioned, we both got to talk to the guy we mentioned, Shea Theodore, just missing one tooth so far. That lets you know how young he is as a defenseman. But a hell of a defensive player and also a guy that can put the puck in the net, a two-way defenseman, and something that the Golden Knights are really well for. Another guy that hustles every game, gives you his all, and he's done that since he came up from Chicago last year, and Chris and I got a chance to talk to him after the game in the locker room. And this is it. On the other side of the break, when we come back, we'll be talking to Mark Anderson about UNLV, who is on a two-game winning streak.
And a big part of the game was, going deep, moving our feet, and kind of jumping in the rush to kind of add to our attack. And I thought we did a good job.
How about winning the third period? How important was that to win that third period tonight?
That was big. We've had some third period struggles as of late, where we've been up a goal and we've kind of had a couple collapses. But I thought tonight we did a good job. We stuck to our game plan, and I think that was a huge win for our group.
Talk about Malcolm Subban's play tonight.
He was unbelievable. He made a lot of really key saves, at important times. And, I thought there was the one play across the crease where, I thought he had an open net and his leg came out of nowhere. So it's good to see him get back in there and play well and, definitely show that he can play and play well, yeah.
Just to win this game, to get off the snide, you win this game, you got to go to Colorado, but then you got four more here, including Winnipeg coming in next Friday. Huge game tonight.
Yeah, it was big. Anytime you're on a losing streak, you want to get off it as fast as you can. And I thought, the way we played the game tonight was the right way, and that's what, we have to do going forward.
Nate Schmidt was an animal tonight. He was all over the ice leading rushes. What did you think of his play tonight?
I thought he was great. I thought, I don't think he's ever skated faster ever. And, there's a couple times where it was late in his shift and he was still leading the rush. And I think that's good. I think that's, it adds to our attack and adds a different element.
How nice was it to get five on Soros? Because he's kind of had your number in the past. So just how fun was it to put up five goals on that guy tonight?
It was good. We had a lot of shots, a lot of good quality shots. To get a couple in, I think it's been a while since we've put up that many, so let alone on anyone. So I thought it was a good job.
You guys got a full 60-minute effort tonight. Just how good did that feel to get that full 60? Because it seemed like in the past you guys have had a little trouble with that, but to really play a complete game tonight.
Yeah, it was good. When you're on this losing streak, you want to put together complete games and try and turn it around, and that's what we did.
We're just some men that's on the mic, and when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
It's a fact. The UNLV Running Rebels are currently in fifth place in the Mountain West Conference and only a half a game out of fourth place heading to Wyoming, home of the second worst team in the conference. This would normally be a positive thing, but in the big picture, it means very little because most will tell you Menzies should be and will be gone after this season, and nothing short of a Sweet 16 appearance will change that. Joining us, the Review Journal's Mark Anderson, to talk about last night's game in San Jose and the future of this team and its coach. Mark, first of all, welcome back from San Jose. All I can say is that game yesterday, checking it out, wow, what a horrible shooting performance in the first half by the Rebels, and maybe a little bit better in the second half, but anybody but San Jose State and this team probably loses yesterday.
Yeah, and they had every chance to lose that game yesterday to San Jose State. So San Jose State makes more than 9 of 23 free throws. It's a different game at the end. So, it's just, you had some players show up. Tomboy had a really good game. Hardy played really well. And Clyburn had a horrible shooting game, but his 14 rebounds are pretty big. That doesn't excuse the fact that overall it was just a really bad game, and it almost doesn't even count as a win.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, really down the stretch, they did something uncharacteristic. They hit seven of their last eight free throws, and that really helped win this game. And, Mark, it's tough. I mean, they're going up to Laramie, and, this is a game they should win. They go from playing the worst team in the conference to the second worst team, a team with two victories. They should get a win there, which will put them on a three-game winning streak. And, I don't want to be a naysayer, but we saw what happened at San Diego State, and I think next Saturday when San Diego State comes back here, I don't see much of a different outcome. San Diego State is long. They're decent defensively. And I just don't know how UNLV is going to fare when you get to the top four teams in the conference, which only one of them is really good. But I don't see how UNLV beats any one of those teams.
Well, San Diego State, they might be able to compete with just because it's here. San Diego State's not quite the same team when they travel. So, they... they played as well as they have all season when, you know, we faced them the first time. I don't know that they're going to play that as well this time, but I do agree it is a matchup problem. And no matter where that's home and away, that's just a tough matchup for them. But I expect a more competitive game. I mean, how can you not, right? Expect a more competitive game.
It has to be.
But to your point, where they'll win the game, I wouldn't put my house up for it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I people are saying what's going to happen at the end of this year. And, Mark, I'm one of those people. I understand everyone's naysaying Menzies and that he's not the guy for the job. I'm just getting tired of listening to all the bashing. The guy is doing what he does. Enough dancing on his grave. I mean, from everyone that I've talked to in the know, they're like, Marvin's gone next year. And here we are. We still got a lot of season to play. So I'm not going to sit here and have you and me talk about the end of Marvin Menzies, but we all know he's on the hot seat. Mark, and again, just what, in your opinion, do you think it would take? And this is what I get asked all the time, for him to keep his job this year.
It's hard to know because, you have to be skeptical when people are insisting they know the decision's been made on him, because there's one person making the decision.
Right.
And she hasn't, and she's very careful about what she says. So, if people are talking to other, and in the past, I would say, yes, you could talk to sources around the athletic department and get a pretty good feel. That's not so much the case with Desiree Reed Cransaw. She is making her decision without the influence of boosters, and she is making the decision privately, or she's going to do the deliberative process privately. So, it's not a certain thing that he's gone. She really likes him. She likes Marvin Menzies, but obviously she has her concerns about some things about the program. So. If you had, certainly he's his job's it is in trouble, but I would not. It's not 100% he's gone, and for him to, if they finish strong this season, maybe make a little bit of a run in the Mountain West tournament. I don't know that's enough for him to come back, but at least gives him a talking point, and if he can maybe. Get a recruit, get a key commitment from a big recruit out there, that would help him too. But the one thing that really works against them is they're just not drawing anyone. And, there's no incitement in the city for the program, and I don't see that changing next season if he comes back, because he's bringing back largely the same team, and losing Nova Botham and Chris Clyburn on top of it. There won't be any excitement going into next season, so that's got to be something that weighs in her mind too. But I don't want to put odds on whether he's going to come back or not, because, like I said, she keeps things to herself pretty well. But there's just no question that his job is on the line.
Yeah, why the thing is with Desiree Reed Cransaw, you're 100% right. She is very good at not letting on anything. And again, the things that I hear, and you're right, opinions and rumors are like the thing we carry behind us. We've all got one, and it's not necessarily always correct. But she hasn't really done anything as far as a major move comes since she came here, and Menzies and Sanchez aren't her guys. So, and with Sanchez, where you say, she's not going to make decisions based on maybe, the Board of Regents or the alumni or boosters or what have you, but yet in the same respect, we all knew when we saw a tweet by Fertitta that Tony Sanchez was keeping his job no matter what happened in the last three games of the season. So you wonder, when is she going to put her stamp on something? And that's what I say. But I have been saying, Mark, on this show for the last month that I am supporting Menzies coming back next year only because what are you going to do? Are you going to just go grab somebody else, get an assistant coach from somewhere and put a Band-Aid on a bullet hole? I mean, let him take this team that is majority his players. You do lose two key elements next year in Robotham and Clyburn, but you've got guys like Ntombwe coming back who there is a tremendous upside. If they can get somebody to teach this guy defense, I think there's a tremendous upside. I don't see a great skill set on this team, but it is Marvin's team. It will have a year of seasoning under its belt, and give the guy a chance because they're not going to pay anybody, and who are you going to bring in to replace him? And that's been my feeling. But I get argued. Everyone argues with me, so, but that's what I think. What do you think of that?
Well, I think you make a great point. you know, if you, unless you have someone in your pit pocket you think is going to really get people excited and really infuse real life into this program, she's got to think about that. You know, I mean, you know, the people want Patino. Patino's not coming here. No college is going to hire Patino right now, and because you have not only the feds doing what they're doing, but the NCAA hasn't even begun its investigation yet, and they already made it clear that once the feds are finished, they're going to start and take the evidence from the feds and do their own investigation. So colleges can't even touch him right now because everyone knows he's going to get investigated, and people know that it's just going to be ugly. So you know, unless you have someone of that caliber here, you know, it's, you know, do you really want to go through the process again of starting over? So that's something she has to think about. You know, and if she truly believes that Marvin Menzies' long-term plan is going to get them where everyone wants the program to be, then she'll stick with him and try to ignore you know, the doubters. So, you know, that's something that she has to decide. And because we've seen it before where, you know, you get rid of a coach, but the guy you're bringing in isn't necessarily any better. So, you know, and I think the school learned, even though she wasn't here last time, I think the school learned from the last coaching search is you better be more organized, and you better have a bunch better plan, because they clearly didn't have a plan last time. They just made a move with Dave Rice, and then say, let's see what's out there. Well, I'm sure with her background and her intelligence, she knows who's out there, she knows who's available, and whether she thinks that would be an improvement on what she already has, then that's will probably largely drive her decision.
Well, I agree, and we'll never see again, at least in the near future, anything like what happened with Rice, where a coach gets fired in the middle of the season, three games into the conference schedule, and the program has never been the same quite since. But I don't think Desiree Reed-Francois, even if she came out and said it, at least I would hope not, that she believes in any way, shape, or form that Marvin Menzies is the future of this program. And the reason I say that, Mark, is because based on the body of work, you can't believe that. But what she could believe is, you know what, he does deserve one more season. That I would go with, and I think anybody that understood the sport and the game would think that. Before I let you go, the one name that to me has invoked a little bit of curiosity, that's out, a guy that's out there that you might be able to get at a reasonable price, would be a guy like Thad Matta. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's interesting. Frankly, I hadn't even thought of his name, to be honest with you. There's some other names that have come to my mind that I thought would be under consideration, but yeah, that would be interesting. I think it would certainly get people. It certainly increased the curiosity factor.
Yeah, well, you got a name out there. Listen, he is Mark Anderson. It's Mark Anderson. Is it _65 or just straight 65?
Just straight 65.
Mark Anderson, 65. You'll see the blue arrow there because Mark has a lot of followers, and for good reason. He handles the beat for UNLV football and basketball, and Mark does a great job with it. We always appreciate you joining the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Brian. You take care of yourself.
Absolutely. Chris, before we get off the subject of UNLV basketball, you know my feeling. I think you and I have echoed each other's sentiments. There's been times where you, especially being an alumni, have wanted to pull what the hair is left in your head out. I have as well, and I'm not even an alumni. But then when we sit back and we think about this reasonably and rationally, it almost just does make sense to keep Menzies one more year. It is only his third year. You have got to, I don't care what anyone says, you have got to throw out that first year. He was the third choice. He knew it. They got him at a bargain basement price of $750,000 at the last minute. He threw together a team, and the team competed. That's the best you can say. They got out there and played basketball. The next year, he recruited a one-and-done in Brandon McCoy. Didn't quite work out the way that he thought it was. He definitely was no Aiken of Arizona, but So last year was kind of wishy-washy. This year, he replaced it with a bunch of people. I see a bunch of young kids that look like there is potential. Yes, losing Clyburn and Rabotham is going to be a loss, but this is a team that has some potential, not the best athletic team ever, but it is Marvin Menzies' team. It is another year of seasoning, and I just don't know who they would get to replace him that they could afford or they would afford that would do any better than he'll do next year.
Well, yeah, and I don't know. I mean, look, that's a question to be answered by people who make a lot more money than me. What I do think is that it's unfair to pile on Marvin Menzies. And look, and I'm not saying that he's done anything to really, you know, wow the people here in Vegas. But, you know, I don't really know if he's done anything for him to be fired either. I mean, it's like, I guess, you know, some people are just impatient. And I think that Marvin Menzies is trying to build something. I like the young players he's got. And you know what? The reality is, look, you do lose Clyburn and Robotham, and that's where you hope Hardy, Tom Way, and Bryce Hamilton step up. Because that's the progression. If those guys don't step up, if Marvin Menzies is around next year, it's hard to justify keeping him after that. But those guys are going to have to go out there next year, and they're going to have to show that they can grow as players. And you know, I just think it's unfair to pile on the guy because last year, again, when he comes on so late into the recruiting process, he's behind the eight ball not just for that first year, but for the second year as well. And I understand he got McCoy and he got Justin. I think McCoy disrupted the chemistry a little bit, and I think he checked out after that Arizona game.
I would agree with you 100%. He was just looking to go to the next level, and who knows if he'll ever even play at the next level, man. What a disappointment overall it ended up being for the program and for him personally. Listen, we are going to take a break. We're going to come back with Blazin. Mags, this is wild when we come back on the other side, but you know in Duke's history, they've only had five players that have ever had a triple-double, and it happened last night, which I was really surprised at that statistic with all the great ones that have gone through Duke. So we'll be right back, and we'll do Blazin. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. It is time for Blazin, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and North Durango. A simple three-pointer away from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every day, and as we know, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. During football season, I am up there every Monday night hosting the Monday Night Football Party. Love it. Been there forever, and we love it. Blazin, man, first of all, I'm going to say the number one Tennessee Volunteers who we talked about last week, were they a house of cards? I don't think they are. I still think they have one of the best trios in the country, but got humbled at Kentucky yesterday, which I thought might happen. The Kentucky Wildcats, after winning 19 straight, the Volunteers lose last night, and I'll tell you right now, this Kentucky team, John Calipari, again, has a team that is starting to play their best basketball as we get into the last month of the collegiate season. They are really, really good, and I actually think they are the only team that if everyone is playing great on Duke, I think they're the one team that could potentially beat them, but they'd have to play their best game, and that goes into my honorable mention, Blazin, because I'm giving it to Kentucky for beating Tennessee. But how can we not mention, Duke and their illustrious history, all these great players, Grant Hill, Christian Laettner. We can go on and on with Duke's great ones, Johnny Dawkins. But last night, R.J. Barrett gets the fifth triple-double in Duke history by getting, he had 23 points to go with 11 rebounds and 10 assists. I'm not a big fan of the Blue Devils, but I got to take it out to R.J. Barrett, especially when you've got a teammate like Zion Williamson, who scores 32 last night. He takes the Thunder with the triple-double. Listen, we are here every Sunday. I want to thank my guest today, Frank Harnish, for joining the show. Of course, Mark Anderson with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Always Chris Magnum Chapman behind the wheels of steel. And, of course, the Vegas Golden Knights that gave us a little bit of their time. Max Pacioretty, Shea Theodore, and Malcolm Subban. I am Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. We will be back same time, same place next week. Look forward to it. And, hey, next Sunday we'll talk about the trading deadline, which will be a day after next week's show in the National Hockey League. We will see you then.